So this is the beginning of the winter retreat, and so we'll talk a little bit about what we'll be doing during the retreat, and just that we might feel a little bit of excitement at the prospect of 3 months of retreat time, or a little bit less than 3 months of retreat time, a little bit more than 11 weeks, since this is January 6th, and we'll be going till March 31st. And there'll be different phases of the retreat. We'll start out with 3 weeks of a full practice schedule, and then we'll open it up a little bit and have some solitary retreats, get to get in touch with solitude, what we think of as the retreats within the retreat, and doing study and practice. And I thought for the kind of thinking of what should be the theme, we normally have a theme for our winter retreats. In the past, we've done things like Four Noble Truths, Eightfold Path, Satipatthana. And because we might have some Krupa Ajahn visits this year, I was thinking just getting back to traditional ways of practice. And when you hear Dhamma talks from disciples of Longpo Cha, they're always talking about these traditional ways of practice and how things were done in the quote-unquote old days, and just how these practices are always relevant. So just things like focusing on how we're eating our meal, what we're consuming. This is the teaching on nutriment and being able to focus on that with mindfulness. We do the what is called the Pachawekana, the Adita Pachawekana, which is the reflecting on how am I using my requisites, how am I using the robes, how am I using alms food, how am I relating to the lodging, how am I relating to medicinal requisites. And as lay people, you can do this as well. And just are we using them just for practical purposes, or are we becoming infatuated with things, wanting good food, wanting the best possible food, not wanting food that might disagree with our palate, and so on. So we reflect, how are we using these things, and how did I use these things today? So each day, one of the traditional ways of practice is to think, oh, how will I use the robes, alms food, lodgings, medicinal requisites today? How am I using robes, alms food, lodgings, medicinal requisites today? And how did I use the robes, lodgings, alms food, medicinal requisites today? So these are this is the wisely reflecting reflection that we do. So it's just basic practices like this. How are we living? Rather than getting stuck on the words of the teachings and saying, well, this teacher kind of says this, and that teacher says that, and this sutta is translated like this, and this translator translates like this, that translator translates like that, and I think that's more correct, and that kind of resonates more with me. So rather than getting lost in the words, just look at what we're doing. So we might talk a good talk, but how are we acting? What are our actions? Our actions will speak louder than words. So whatever we do is that's what's creating the kamma, so that's what's important. And the way we express words, there's going to be an intention and a meaning behind them. And so, say for example, people who would criticize Tanajan Mahabua for teaching for the deathless citta teaching, you know, these things are so hard to articulate. So it's somebody, he's teaching from experience, speaking from experience. And, you know, anybody who would criticize him just for the words he's using, I would think is quite, there's no doubt in my mind anyway, that that's quite foolish. Because it's just looking at the words, it's not looking at the essence. It's just looking at the surface. It's not looking at the heart. It's just looking at the leaves. It's not looking at the heartwood. It's just looking at things in a superficial way. It's also the same as like the Kruba Ajahns would teach, that it's hard to know. Say we might want to know, are there any arhants alive? And yet that's difficult to know. Remember, there was sometimes when you type things into Google, there's like suggested things that it thinks you're going to type. And I was typing it. I can't remember what I was looking up, but how to do something. And I typed in like how to, and then what came up was how to know somebody is an arhant. So enough people have searched for that on Google that came up as an auto suggestion. And the answer I thought was pretty good, that the AI or whatever it came up with, which was, well, arhants have this pesky quality known as humility, so you probably won't know. You probably won't know if somebody's an arhant. So, that's pretty good. So because we tend to see things on the surface, we tend to see the personality. And it's like Lompa Sumedho constantly teaches that the personality isn't what gets enlightened. It's something much deeper than that. The personality will stay there until our death anyway, until the death of the body, and the personality will be there. And the ingrained character will be there. Even the kind of mannerisms and habits which we might find irritating or off-putting, those would still be there for an arhant, or even ways of speaking. So like Ajahn Jayasaro has this teaching that I know I've heard him say it a few times, like an inarticulate, ignorant being becomes an inarticulate arhant. So it's not that the manner will change very much, although the manner will change, I think, but it takes living with someone for a while to notice, oh, this person's actually not suffering. It takes, like people would have to live with Lumpur Cha for a while to see, oh, he's actually not suffering. There's actually not even the slightest trace of suffering there. But it's hard to see because we're blinded by our own way of seeing things, by our biases. This is called in Pali agati. We're blinded by our biases. And so we're not actually seeing people where they're at. We're seeing people where we're at. So we're not seeing people where they're at. We're seeing people where we're at. And that's the lens through which we're seeing everybody. And ourselves, that's the lens that we're seeing ourselves through. So the vision isn't purified, and the knowledge and vision of things as they are hasn't arisen yet. That's the yata bhuta jnanadasanang. That's only through the practice. So another traditional approach that these ajahns tend to use is sila samadhi panya, that the sila, the precepts, the virtue is the foundation. And it's absolutely indispensable. So there's this really strong focus on sila. So even for us more senior monks, we need to focus on this. I was reviewing this talk by Lumpa Khun this morning. He's one of the Kruba Ajahns who might visit us this year, later in June. And this is a talk I was at Chithurst, a few days before Visakha Puja, back in May 22nd. And he's talking just sila samadhi panya and these traditional ways of speaking. And he used the analogy of a boat. So as we know in the suttas, there's the analogy of the raft. The raft is to cross the flood of desire, the flood of ignorance. And the raft is the Noble Eightfold Path. But then Lumpa Khun said, using the analogy of, say, a boat, having to build ourselves a boat to cross the flood. But then any time there's a breach in the precepts, it's like the boat has a leak in it, and we might not make it. So we have to actually patch those holes. And so to even for those of us who have been at this for a while, looking, reassessing, cleaning things up, patching the holes, so that and bailing the water out so the boat isn't leaking, so the boat doesn't sink. And if we don't purify our sila, if we don't really keep it well, then the boat will sink. We won't cross the flood. We won't make it to the other shore. So the sila is very, very important. It's indispensable. And that sense of harmonious ways of living with others and that sense of non-remorse in the mind, it'll naturally settle. The mind can naturally settle into samadhi. So these are very traditional teachings, and we don't really have to come up with anything new. We've already got this. This is the Theravada. This is the way of the elders. So we've already got the teachings. We don't have to make up new teachings. We don't have to come at it in some ultra charismatic way that's really new and tantalizing. We've got the traditional methods. We've got the Krupa Ajahn's, and we've got these practices. They're already talked about since the time of the Buddha. And we don't have to understand them in some new way, because the understanding already came about from the teachers that we know, Ajahn Mun, Ajahn Chah, and so on, Ajahn Liam, Ajahn Sumedho, Ajahn Pasano, Ajahn Amaro, all of our teachers. So the understanding isn't new. We don't have to come to some sort of new understanding. If the understanding is new and better, then be careful. Be careful. That's a danger. If there's some sort of new understanding that nobody's ever had before, you know, be careful. That's seductive, yes. But I think it's not correct. What's correct is to compare the understanding with those who have come before. Comparing it not just with the suttas. The suttas have various translations, but also comparing it with the teachings of the Krupa Ajahn's. Does it match or not? So, having taken dependence, the monastic community has taken dependence, and really we all depend on each other. That's the final chant is Ajatage Dani Tero Mayang Baro Ahampi Tero Sabaro, which means the elder is my burden and I am the burden of the elder. So really we all depend on each other. It is a beautiful ceremony to take dependence on myself as the current senior monk present, being currently the most senior monk in the room. That is a very beautiful gesture. But it doesn't mean that I can just tell everybody what to do. So we all depend on each other. So something that we're going to be doing a little bit different during this period of time with the winter retreat, and perhaps after, and we'll see. These things are always subject to change, but that on the lunar observance days, we won't be giving talks, but we'll be playing kind of a longer reading having to do with the collected works of Ajahn Chah. At least we'll be doing that at first, so that on the lunar observance days, we won't be live streaming, but we'll just be listening to a talk with commentary. And then we'll still be giving live stream Dhamma talks live on the Saturday nights. So that also simplifies things for us. Us monks who are more senior can get down to focusing on our own practice, going inward a little bit more, and enjoying listening to teachings rather than always giving teachings. And then on the normal days that aren't the, say if it's not the Saturday, the Lunar Observance Day, or the day after the Observance Day, then there will be a daily schedule which will be posted, and there will be readings at 6 p.m. Tea time is going to be a bit early. Tea time will be 5 p.m., and then a reading, about a half-hour reading at 6 with some opportunity for Dhamma discussion, and after that going into evening puja. So that'll be the schedule that will follow for 3 weeks that'll be posted. Of course, tomorrow being another day after the observance day, tomorrow we do have another open day, maybe a little bit more training for the retreat crew, the maintenance crew, who've come together to serve this retreat. So I also want to take the opportunity to say a big anumodana for the lay community who's come together to serve, because this does help us quite a bit. And we have 9 months of the year that we're doing our work periods and various projects in the monastery, and now we have this very precious 3 months where, as a monastic community, we really get to focus on solitude and on our meditation practice. So it's a really, really special time, really precious time for us. And also to say, to be careful with any aspirations we might have for wanting to practice. If we're wanting to practice really hard, that's great. Wanting to push ourselves, that's really good. But also knowing that we want to do something that's sustainable. This is a 3-month retreat. That's a quarter of a year. So it's a long time. And we will go through various experiences and moods and phases through the course of the retreat. One thing to keep in mind is just focus on, just to take note of how much the weather affects our mood. When the sun comes out, how is that? When it's cloudy and rainy, how is that? And when we're feeling really low, then first thing to do is say, oh, what's the weather doing? Does that have anything to do with my mood? And then take a look at, oh, what's coming up for me? So it's more like a marathon rather than a sprint. So if we sprint too hard right at the beginning, then we just end up falling on our face, and then it slows down a bit. And we're following noble silence, so that doesn't mean no talking, but it just means talking when necessary. This is a great gift. This is a great gift to ourselves and others, just to not have to really cultivate the personality so much, not have to talk about anything super interesting or amazing, but just that, again, that nurturing the ability to go inward. We're not going to do it as strongly as Ajahn Chah did it back in the day, where when Ajahn Chah was in his teaching heyday, he would just say, okay, well, we're going to do the mukha vata, the closed mouth practice, where the noble silence, where we just do the chanting and so on, and nobody talk at all. And he would say, if you have to talk, come talk to me, and we can talk. And I don't think anybody wanted to do that. So you had some Vasa periods, some retreat periods at Wat Pa Pong, where it was said to be extremely free of talking. But here, you know, we're going to hold it in not quite as tightly as that. There can be some talking, and it's only natural that, say, after a month of retreat, we might be feeling good from that 3 weeks of practice. We'd be pushing ourselves a bit, and that brings up wholesome mental states, a lot of brightness in the mind. And if we're not careful, that can spill out in terms of talking. But it's not bad talking. It's going to be we're going to be really enjoying ourselves and wanting to express some of that. But then we'll, this is just a natural progression of the retreat. We will need to rein it in a bit and then hold that good energy inside and then transmute that to an even brighter mind and hopefully a sense of waking up, a sense of awakening. And another traditional teaching is that we want to practice carefully. This is very common advice from the Kruba Ajahns, is to dong ramat rawang. You have to patipat doi ramat rawang, practice with carefulness. That comes up in the suttas too. One practices carefully, one practices mindfully, one practices carefully. Just to look carefully at what we're doing and not get too lost, say if we're in a very good mood, to not get too lost in that, but to look at it with a sense of great sobriety. Because what we're looking at with the Four Noble Truths and the letting go of desire is a very intense form of sobriety. We're looking at the roots of addiction, the roots of craving. So when we have a very good feeling, to not get too lost in that, but look at it with carefulness and equanimity. Use that basis of equanimity to look at the really good, pleasant feelings that will inevitably arise when we put effort into the practice. And when we feel low and or some sort of old kamma is percolating up in the mind, to look at that with a sense of sobriety. Look at that with a sense of evenness and compunction. When we feel irritated and angry, to take a deep breath and then just look at that with evenness, look at that with carefulness. If we're going to act on that, then look at that action with carefulness, carefully assess what am I about to do here? What am I about to say here? That way, practicing that way, we develop a sense of a Dhamma compass and a sense of what's wholesome and unwholesome. When we really start to see what's wholesome and unwholesome, it's going to be harder and harder to act on the unwholesome because we'll see the danger in it. We'll see the damage that does both to ourselves and others. When we gain a sense for the wholesome, it'll start to be easier and more natural to act on those wholesome intentions. So whether it's an intention for generosity or it's an intention to get out on the walking meditation path or to sit a little bit more on the meditation cushion, or to say something that does need to be said, to say something kind to somebody, or to give a word of encouragement to somebody. That'll be coming from a wholesome intention, an act of generosity, or the abhayadana, the sense of offering forgiveness. That's a form of generosity as well. And the Dhammadana, the giving of advice or the giving of Dhamma or the book mailing, that falls within Dhammadana as well. Posting the talks, updating these things, that's also Dhammadana. So we do this with a wholesome intention. The more we do this with a wholesome intention, we're going to see the fruits of that. We're going to see the benefits of that. This is called the anisangsa, or in Thai, the anisong, the fruits of the practice, the fruits of generosity, the fruits of good actions. So 3 months is a long enough retreat to start to see the benefits of those things. And then the solitude that we'll have and the time that we're going to have in meditation is also going to be long enough to be able to see where the mind is still getting stuck. What is it still habitually thinking about? What are the circles that it gets stuck in? What are the eddies, the whirlpools that it's getting stuck in? It's another thing Lumpur Kuhn touched on in his talk. He said the Dhamma, the practice is to go straight to the other shore. It's not to keep circling around. So where are we circling around? Where are we stuck? I've been using the simile of having to deal with karmic baggage quite a bit, but could maybe change that a little bit, because it's not always like baggage. Sometimes maybe a better image would be sludge, like the sludge of the defilements, the sludge of the kilesa. And we're just kind of carrying this bag of sludge around. Or it's like there's a kind of toxic sludge that's built up around the heart and stuck to the heart. And we need to immerse the heart in the practice, in the strong medicine of the practice, to really dissolve it and break it up. And when that happens, if the kind of caked on sludge on the heart, parts of it start to come off, then the parts that get exposed are going to be very, very raw. And so there might be a sense of vulnerability. There might be a sense of feeling dis-ease for a bit. But that's also part of the healing process, part of the purification, the cleaning process. So we're cleaning things out. We still will be engaged in things like chores, so we're not going to be meditating all the time. And using those chores, using every activity of the day for the practice. So when we're cleaning, then cleaning every corner, getting really intent on the cleaning, that has a strong effect on the mind. However we clean our dwelling place, and however we clean the meditation hall or the kitchen, or the dining hall, try to find those places which don't normally get cleaned. Go behind the shrine, you know, go into the corners behind and under the counters. So, and then get all the muck out of those places. So that's what we want to do in the mind. With the coarser defilements, the greed, hatred, delusion, that's just like taking the mop, mopping the floor. But then we've got all these more refined greed, hatred, and delusion stuck in the corners of the mind. So that's where you really need to get down on your hands and knees and scrub the corners that don't normally get scrubbed. So these are just images or analogies, ways of thinking about the practice. May or may not be helpful. Sometimes we have to come at it from many different angles. So we're all going to find different teachings to be helpful in different ways. Keeping the mind with the present moment. That's the mindfulness. Present moment awareness. That's the clear awareness, the sampajanya. So sati and sampajanya, that's another traditional teaching that's going to come up over and over again. The sati is actually just a sense of remembering what's correct, what's Dhamma. What does the Dhamma say to do in this particular moment? What does the Dhamma say is correct in this particular moment? What does the Dhamma Vinaya say is correct in that this or that particular moment? So that's just that sense of remembrance, and that's always linked with effort. That's linked with right effort. that upright effort just to remember, oh, what's appropriate according to Dhamma in this moment. And then that sati gets linked with sampajanya. So the Dhamma will say, well, what's appropriate in this moment is to establish a sense of awareness. So there has to be that effort and the remembrance. That's the establishing of the mindfulness. And then the clear awareness itself, the sampajanya, or clear knowing itself. And how is that defined? Sampajanya is just defined as walking forward. One knows one's walking forward. Walking back, one knows one's walking back. Lifting one's arms or legs, one knows one's lifting one's arms or legs. Speaking, one knows one is speaking. Keeping silent, one knows one is keeping silent. Even in urinating and defecating, one knows one is doing that. One is clearly aware of what one is doing. So that sense of non-distraction, that's what sampajanya is pointing toward. Eating, one knows one's eating. Chewing, one knows one's chewing. Swallowing, one knows one is swallowing. It's not that we have to think eating, 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 chewing, 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 swallowing, swallowing, swallowing. But that just, there's that clear knowing of what we're doing in any given moment. It doesn't have to be verbalized. We don't have to remind ourselves what we're doing, or we don't have to label what we're doing even. But there's just that clear awareness of what we're doing in the moment. So to further understand this, we can also think, okay, well, what is the opposite of that? The opposite of that is, say we're walking and we're not aware that we're walking, we might run into a wall, or we're not, or we might run into a door, or we might trip over something. So if we're walking and we're not aware that we're walking, and we're, the mind is thinking of all sorts of other things other than just being aware of the walking, which on the surface can be boring, and that's why the mind wants to jump around here and there. But it is the way of peace. It's the way that the mind becomes strong. When the mind is jumping around all over the place, it doesn't actually become stronger from that. It becomes weaker. And when the mind is just quiet and still and settled in a very natural way, not in a forced way, so it becomes settled in a natural way through just, it takes time. Repressing the mind or forcing it down doesn't settle it. It's just gonna spurt out in various ways. The mind will rebel to that kind of practice. So, but with that effort and that establishment of mindfulness, the mind can naturally settle. The heart can naturally settle. And Lumbar Cha would use the analogy of a little bird in the hand. That's how we have to meditate. That's how we have to hold the mind. That if we just don't try to control it at all, we just let it do what it's going to do. It's like opening the hand and the bird, i.e. the mind, is just going to fly away. It'll flitter away here and there. And then if we hold it too tightly and we clamp down and try to keep it exactly in the same place without moving at all, we just crush the little bird, so the mind gets crushed, and it's too tense, it just dies. So we hold the hand just loose enough, just so that little bird can kind of move around a bit, and it's comfortable. It can move around a bit. It's trying to get out of the fingers, it'll poke its beak through our fingers. But eventually it'll just settle down and take a rest. So eventually the mind can just settle down and take a rest. But it can happen in a very natural way. That's something that's sustainable. We could also think about it as just water settling. So for anybody who's ever done adobe building, when you are going to test whether the soil works for your adobe bricks, then you do a settlement test with a jar. You take some of the dirt that you think you might make your adobe bricks with. You put it in the jar, shake it up, and just let it settle. You just keep it still. First, the sand is going to settle on the bottom, and all the different layers are going to stratify. So there's going to be sand. That'll settle pretty quickly. Then there's going to be a layer of, say, silt, or like a kind of a little bit finer sand particles. That's going to be the next layer. Then there's going to be finer, like soil particles. That takes quite a bit longer to settle. And the water will still be, it'll be a little bit more clear, but it's still going to be murky. It might take a couple days. And after about 3 days, the very finest particles have finally settled, because that jar has just been sitting there. So it might take about 3 days for the finest clay particles to settle on the top. And then we can take those percentages and see what percentage of each particle type there is in that mixture. But if at any point in that process we take the jar and we shake it up again, we're going to have to wait for it to settle all over again. So that, and that's another way of thinking about it. So then the water on the very top is very clear, and we can see through it, or we could even drink it if we wanted to. There's many, many other teachings which we will get into, because in listening to and reading teachings from the Forest Ajahns, then we're going to be exposed to all of these things: the metta practice, the compassion, the mindfulness of the body. That is just a really big traditional teaching, really emphasized by the likes of Longpo Mun, and so on, down to the present. So for myself, I'm quite looking forward to slowing down, settling down a bit, being on retreat, and being with a nice-sized community, a manageable-sized community. And I'm looking forward to sharing Dhamma, having Dhamma discussions, and just this is, we've all got strong bonds here in the community. We've been living together, and so yeah, just looking forward to practicing together, spending more time together. And I'll just leave that as a few thoughts for this evening.